This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas.
Xavier André Justo, the 1MDB whistleblower and former Petro-Saudi director who played a central role in the leak of hundreds of thousands of emails in the 1MDB scandal involving Zhou Lau, is with me on the grill this morning. Welcome to Malaysia, Xavier, and good to have you on the show. Let's start in April 2011 when you resigned from Petro-Saudi, the start of all these problems for you. You asked your two good friends, Patrick Mahoney and Tariq Obaid, for a severance package of 6.5 million Swiss francs, but you eventually only signed for 4. Give us a bit of a taste as to the circumstances around that particular scenario.
Okay, good morning to you first. Effectively, I resigned from Petro-Saudi in April 2011 after a year in working for them in London. When I resigned, I've been asked to give my numbers for the severance package. So that's what I did with Petro-Saudi and Tariq Obaid's lawyer. I asked for 6.5 million. That was done because I calculated that for the many years I worked for Tariq Obaid and Petro-Saudi, for the help I provided to him and to his family during the bad times they had. So I came up with this figure that was accepted by Tariq Obaid and his lawyer at the very beginning.
So Tariq Obaid was pretty much your best friend at that time, and Patrick Mahoney as well was your friend, it was your buddy. You had been on record to say that both of them have been your friends since at least the mid-90s. So from an outsider's perspective, it does seem as if that your two buddies then eventually got the golden goose, and then they hired you, and then they become your bosses, and then they cut you out of what was eventually one of the most lucrative scams in the history of mankind. Was that the basis of your aggrievement?
Not at all. Tariq Obaid was my friend since the mid-90s. Patrick Mahoney was a friend, not a very, very good friend. Tariq was like my little brother. So I worked for Tariq Obaid and family, and I've been helping them since probably 2000, since early 2000. I was a director of Petro-Saudi since the inception of the company in 2005. I never asked for any kind of money, never, ever. But I was living in Thailand in 2009. Or 2010, when they called me back to go to work to London. That's what I did. I left everything I had in Thailand in 2010, in February 2010, to join Tariq Obaid in London. When this adventure finished with them, of course I was pissed off. I was very bad treated by Tariq Obaid the last months of my stay in London, and they asked me to come with a number. I came with a number. Whenever you find this number very high or very big or indecent, immoral, that's your choosing.
In the context of the $4.5 billion, that's actually not a lot of money. But why had relations between the two of you, you and Tariq, deteriorated to that point? What was the basis of that?
So Tariq Obaid, as I said, was my little brother. I always treat him like my little brother.
And then he became your boss.
Then he became my boss.
And then did he behave in a bossy way?
He behaved in, it was a bossy way, but more than that, I said earlier that when people get a lot of money, they change. You have no idea how that is applying to Tariq's case. I do really believe that he became crazy. He became such an arrogant person just because he made hundreds of millions of your money, by the way. He was not my friend anymore. I didn't recognize my friend.
So money does change people. We know that. So you only worked at Petro-Saudi for just over a year, about 12, 13 months. How many of those months did you get a salary for?
I spent 12 or 13 months in London. I was paid only, I think, five months of salary.
Okay, so they owed you 6 months of salary plus a severance package that you wanted of 6.5 million Swiss francs. You didn't get it. So was this enough to make you aggrieved enough to say to your friend in the IT department, and let me just go on record, because you've said to the press, the guy in the IT department, information technology, was someone that you helped get hire in Petro-Saudi. You asked him for a copy of the hard drive. He gave you the copy of the hard drive. Why?
So I left, again, I want to be very precise with you and with your auditors. I left Petro-Saudi in April 2011. I went back to Geneva before going back to Asia. During my time in Geneva, I called this IT guy from the company K&K, to be very precise, and he was my friend. He was working for my assets portfolio management company in Geneva. as an IT guy. So when Petro Saudi needed an IT guy, what I did?
So he was your friend?
He was my friend.
And he agreed to get a copy of the hard drive for you, 90 gigabytes, 270,000 emails, and he gave it to you.
So I called him in May 2011. I had a coffee with him, and I asked for a copy of the data of the Petro Saudi server. I told him, and I told him explicitly, that if I could get that, it would be for my own protection.
Why did he say it was your protection?
Because during my stay in London, I never saw anything illegal as a fact. But there were a lot of big amounts going around Petro Saudi. So in case of one day a problem, I wanted to be protected. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. And he gave those data without any condition, without any money asked, without any kind of reward or services.
At what point in time did you think that this information on that hard drive was worth money to you, above and beyond the outstanding 2.5 million Swiss francs that you wanted under your severance package?
So again, I don't know if many of the auditors are IT experts, but to go through 227,000 emails is something that probably will take tens of years or hundreds of years. 227,000 emails with attachment, I don't know how many books could be represented. It's more than a lot. Even today, even last month or 2 months ago, from time to time, I just plug in the data, the hard drive, and I go fishing. And I'm still able to find extraordinary documents.
Okay, so Xavier, here's the situation. You asked for your 6.5 million Swiss francs. You got 4 million Swiss francs. You're outstanding 2.5 million Swiss francs, plus ostensibly 5 months' worth of salary, right? But these two guys, who were your bosses at the time, were once your friends. One of them was your best friend. And personal animosity towards Tariq must have been high. I mean, there are stories about him paying what a common friend of both of you to disrupt your wedding. So that could have been the straw that broke the camel's back. Did that come to a point where he said, okay, It goes beyond business. It's personal now between me and Tariq. This is when I really screw him for the money. Did that ever enter your mind?
It was not that way, but in a way, yes. So after this Petro Saudi adventure, I went back with my wife. She was my fiance, but after that she became my wife. We went back to Thailand. I think it was in September 2011. We got engaged in February 2012. So life was going on. We were building a very beautiful resort in Koh Samui. This Petro Saudi adventure was not my priority, I was not even thinking about that. The only moments where I was thinking about that, to be honest, getting pissed off, is every time I was going back to Geneva, I was hearing stories about Mr. Obeid saying that he fired me, that I didn't really was working.
He was bad-mouthing you,
He was very bad-mouthing you. But this was pissing me off, but it was still acceptable. Everything broke up the day during my wedding in February 2013. We had a common friend that, of course, he opened his mouth and he said, Tariq offered me $20,000 to disrupt your wedding. So that was a turning point.
And then you said, this is enough. I'm going to get these guys back. And these guys are living the high life. They've got billions of dollars. They've been flying on private jets. They're renting super yachts to go around the world. They're partying with Paris Hilton and all these kind of people, Jamie Foxx and what have you. And you said, this has got to stop.
No, that's not exact. It was not because they were either billionaires or having yachts or partying with Jamie Foxx or whoever they wanted. It's just because I just realized that I had an agreement with them. I signed for 4, but they accepted the 6.5. So I said, I went back to Patrick and said, hey, now it's okay. It's enough. I just want my money.
So I understand that the Petro Saudi hard drives were actually erased in 2011. The copy that you had, they did not know that you had this copy. They did not know that you had this trump card up your sleeve. Is that right?
They didn't know I had the copy.
Do you think that they would have paid you the 2.5 million Swiss francs that you wanted if they had known that you had this hard drive?
I have no idea.
Why did he not ask them to say, hey, I've got something that you badly want and that can incriminate you, put you in jail. In return for the 2.5 million Swiss francs that you owe me, I'll give you back this hard drive. Why did you say that to them?
It's very easy to go back and say, what would have happened if. I'm quite convinced that if they could go back on time, they will offer me like 25 million or 250 million.
Why did he not offer this hard drive in return for the 2.5 million Swiss francs you felt you were owed?
Ask them. Don't ask
no,
me.
No, I ask you because you had the copy of the hard drive. You knew that this is one of the only original ones left in the world that had this amount of data. Why didn't you just say that? Why did you eventually agree to talk to Clare Castle Brown and The Edge to get this information out?
So, again, to be precise and go back to the story, I got engaged in February 2012, married in 2013, and my wife was pregnant early 2014. This story was not a big part in my life. We were working. I was going to be a father. I was not my priority was not to chase these people or this money. I was having my life. So eventually, in 2014, I was contacted by Clare.
I'm talking this morning to the 1MDB whistleblower, Xavier André Justo. And after this, we're going to be talking more about this relationship between him and Clare Brown and The Edge, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill.
I'm talking this morning to Xavier André Justo, the 1MDB whistleblower, who is in town to attend a conference and who is talking to various mainstream media about his episode with Petro Saudi. Now, Xavier, last we left it, you said that you had come across Clare Castle Brown, 2014. She had actually contacted you via email. And then you met her physically in a hotel in Bangkok. What happened during that conversation?
So we met two times in the Plaza Athene Hotel in Bangkok, to be again precise. She wanted to know if I had information about the Petro Saudi 1MDB deal. So I said yes. We spent a few hours together. If you know her, you know that she's very convincing, that she's very motivated. And she was very motivated to uncover the 1MDB scam. So she needed information, which I had.
The thing is, the trump card up your sleeve was the hard drive. Now, up until that point, you had not told Patrick Mahoney or Tariq Ubaid that you had this hard drive in your possession. Is that right?
Yes.
Why? It was a very simple transaction. Tariq, I've got this drive that you want. I want 2.5 million Swiss francs. Why not?
As I told you before, I was married. My wife was getting pregnant. This Petro Saudi 2.5 million were, I would not say out of my mind, but pretty much. So I was becoming a father for the first time. I was 48 years old. It was something not unexpected, but it was probably the major achievement of my life. So honestly, and again, I will repeat it this again and again, because this is the truth, these 2.5 million were not my priority at that moment.
So Clare Brown met you in Bangkok, and then you told her that you had this hard drive.
Yes.
And then obviously her eyes must have lit up, as a journalist must have, right?
I think she was quite excited.
She must have been quite excited. At which point you asked for $2.5 million.
I asked her, like I asked, by the way, Petro Saudi, the very first day, I asked if she could find a buyer for 2.5 million, the money that was owed to me by Petro Saudi. Not 3 million, not 5 million, not 20 million, 2.5 million, the money owed to me.
Correct. So the problem with whistleblowing is that there's a very fine line between whistleblowing and blackmailing, right? At what point in time, what were the circumstances that led to your incarceration in the Thai jail?
So, again, the line between blackmailing and whistleblowing, it's up to you to decide. There is no school for whistleblowers. There is no diploma for whistleblowers, you know? I would have loved to attend a whistleblowing
school. Was it personal, given the deterioration in your relationship with Tariq Ubaid?
Again, it will sound strange. Maybe in 2012 it was important and it was personal. 2013, my life changed. I was living a happy life in Thailand. I had a beautiful life there, a very nice project of building a very beautiful resort. I was, again, as I told you, becoming a father. So it was in 2013, this episode of the Petro Saudi was far behind me.
So in a way, the entry in your life of Clare Castle Brown and then latterly The Edge must have been one of those turning points in your life, because it upended your idyllic lifestyle in Thailand and eventually landed you in jail.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
So after my meetings with Clare in Bangkok, a few months later, it was in February 2015, she told me that I should go to Singapore to meet two people interested by the file. So that's what I did. I went to Singapore. I met the owner and the CEO of The Edge, and Claire was there.
So the owner of The Edge was a man called Dato' Tong Hui Yong. The editor of The Edge was a man called Ho Kei Tat. You met them too in Singapore with Claire Brown.
Absolutely.
What happened in that conversation?
So, again, when I get along well with people, I become quite friendly with them. So we spend a few hours together with Claire, with Mr. Tong, with Mr. Kei Tat. And they were the first one that really described and explained to me into details what was this 1MDB corruption machine, how this national fund, in a way, was pumping out the money from the Malaysian people. And,
so you,
and to be, again, they asked me, how much do you want for that? And that's what I said.
$2.5 million US dollars.
I want the money that is owed to me, not a single penny more. And I want to repeat that again. If I wanted to sell this information to the highest bidder, I do think that I probably would have got so much more money.
You must have known at the back of your mind that talking to three journalists would have wide-ranging implications. Of course, you know that by now, that it landed you in jail. You know also, I think, at the back of your mind, that if you had just gone directly to Patrick and Tariq Ubaid, you might have basically sealed it off and it would be the end of the chapter. Why didn't you do that? Why did you make, at that point in time, that decision in the crossroads?
So the Tariq and Patrick, I replied already, they were not in the picture anymore.
Okay.
I was living another life. So I met Claire, I met the Edge people, and they convinced me. And if I could swear, I will swear. You have to believe me. I was convinced by that the right choice, that the right thing to do was to give those data, regardless if I was going to be paid or not. It's in the Claire's book. I haven't finished to read the Claire books. I'm sorry, Claire, if you're listening to that. I will do one day. But Mr. Tong, when he wanted to pay me, I said, hey, I have not a bank account available for that now. Just shake hands, pay me whenever you want, and if you want. He wanted to give me as a collateral, and this is almost a funny story. He wanted to give me as a collateral an expensive paintings, and I declined this.
I'm talking this morning to Xavier Andre Giusto, the 1MDB whistleblower on The Breakfast Group. Now, something happened, and then your old friends in PetroSaudi got wind of this conversation. In fact, a lot of the emails that were in the hard drive resulted in stories on the Sarawak Report as well as in The Edge. What happened then? How did you end up in the Thai jail?
So I think the first articles were published end of February 2015. I'm not sure about the dates, but it was in February 2015. I was living in Koh Samui. I was reading the press, of course. I was happy to see that what I did was going to be published. I did a mistake. We are all human beings. So
did you not think that Patrick Mahoney and Tariq Ubaid would try and level some justice in their minds on you?
So I did a mistake. I was living in Thailand. I had the feeling that I was immune there, that by staying in Thailand, I wasn't risking anything, because Thailand and Malaysia, one is Buddhist, the other are Muslims. I don't go along very well with the south part problems. I felt immune. My wife went back to Switzerland in June 2015. I was supposed to go back there end of June, early July. But I was arrested before. In June 2015, Patrick Mahoney, Tariq Ubaid, and Petro Saudi filed a complaint in Bangkok for attempted blackmail.
So the Thai police came and raided you in your villa in Koh Samui, and you ended up in jail. The reports have suggested that the Thai police were complicit in this whole debacle. And eventually, as we know it, the reports, you had a list of 50 questions and answers that asserted various things. What were some of those questions and answers?
So PetroSaudi had a total control of my stay in prison. I just want to develop a little bit this part, just to give you a few examples. I never received any letter. I never was able to send any letter. My visits were to be approved by the prison director. I was the only one out of 7,000 prisoners.
What was the charge?
Attempted blackmail.
What does that mean?
That means that, according to the Thai lawyers, I should have been bailed out immediately, because this is what they call a minor offense. I didn't do this offense. I wasn't blackmailing. But even if I had attempted blackmail, you are out on bail 100% of the time. The results for me was I've been sentenced in 4 minutes. I went to the court. I didn't went to the trial room. They sent me to an office where the guy, I suppose it was a judge, read me the sentence in Thai. I was sentenced for 6 years because I had to plead guilty. The sentence was cut in two. So they gave me 3 years for attempted blackmail. This is never seen in the history of Thailand.
So by now we know that the hand of Petro Saudi, the unseen hands, were instrumental in putting you behind bars in Thailand. And then, quite bizarrely, even though the Malaysian chief of police and various other lawmakers tried to get one-on-one discussions with you in jail, they couldn't. But a Straits Times reporter, the Thai reporter for the Singapore Straits Times, a person called Namala Ghosh, got a one-on-one interview with you. What happened there?
The same day when I had the interview with the Straits Times reporter, Patrick Mahoney hired a very expensive Swiss lawyer to defend me and the PR. The role of the Swiss lawyers from a law firm called Lalive, and the lawyer name is Anzelin. I want to say his name because I think he's a crook. So they choose between Patrick Mahoney, Maître Anzelin, and this PR, they choose three newspapers to get an interview with me. And not again in the visiting center. I had the interview with them in the offices of the number two of the prison. So they choose two Swiss journalists, one from the German part of Switzerland and one of the French part from Switzerland, because they wanted to spread their story in Switzerland, which is where Petrosedi was located. And they choose a reporter from the area, from this part of the world, the Straits Times. The journalist, the Straits Times, Mr. Nirmal, I think, he gave the question in advance to a fake UK cop that was there. His name is Paul Finnegan. It's a well-known figure in what happened to me. We filed criminal complaints against this Paul Finnegan. So the Straits Times journalist gave the question in advance. And of course, it was easy for me to prepare with Paul the answer. So I answered the way Patrick and Petro Saudi and Paul Finnegan wanted me to answer.
I'm talking this morning to Xavier André Justo, the 1MDB whistleblower. We're going to be coming back after the news with more discussions on what happened in the Thai jail and all the other events that have happened since then. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill.
Xavier André Justo, the 1MDB whistleblower, is with us on the grill this morning. Now, I think it was either Ho Khe Tat or Dato' Thong Kwee Ong wrote in an op-ed in the newspapers that he said that after Najib's government was ousted in the May 9th elections, you were invited to meet the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, and he recounted a discussion with you. And you were told that after a year in jail, part of a six-year term, right, after about a year in jail, you were told to give a confession, and then if you were to give this confession, you would be out of jail, right? There was obviously unseen hands. Now we know that the Thai police were compromised by the Petro Saudi guys. Is that right?
Petro Saudi and Patrick Mahoney with Paul Finnegan had the total access to the prison. When I said total access, they were even included in our official complaint against them. I had some visits, not very often. I have a couple of friends in Bangkok that came to visit me. Those visiting conversations were taped. Those conversations were sent to Patrick Mahoney in Geneva by the Thai authorities. To threaten my wife, they made her listen to one of my visiting friends talking to me in prison. This is one thing. I had a close visiting list, meaning that if somebody wanted to visit me, if he was not on my list, he couldn't have access to me.
So
and many others.
So why do you think, and let me just ask you this question, to this day, have there been any investigations in the Thai police's participation in the Petro Saudi 1MDB issue?
There is one thing I think I never said to the press. The day before my release from the Thai prison, I think it was the 19th of December 2016, I was supposed to be released the following morning, which happened. I was called for a visit at 6 p.m. The visiting center is closed at 3 p.m. So they called me the day before the visiting, the day before my release. And I went to an office, again, the office of the director of the prison, And there was a guy there waiting for me with a young woman, his assistant. This guy were from the Secret Service of Thailand. He wanted to know what was really happening or what happened with me in prison, because he knew about, like, private visit, this Paul Finnegan, this Patrick Mahoney coming to visit me inside the prison. And even to make me... One of the manipulation or the threat I had, it's to cooperate with Patrick Mahoney and the Petro Saudi story. I had access. My son could visit me inside the prison two times. Okay? Everything was a manipulation. Everything was a conspiration. What the goal of Petro Saudi, Patrick Mahoney, and Tarek Obaid of having me in jail was not to punish me in any way, was to have me locked away from the press, locked away from Europe, and just being manipulated and telling the story that they wanted to be published, that I stole the data, that I manipulated the data, that I was working with the opposition and the press to overthrow a legit government.
So your incarceration in Thai jail was to first to silence you and then laterally to discredit you and whatever you said, so that in the eyes of the public, you were not someone to be believed.
Absolutely.
In terms of your statements on Petro Saudi.
It was not a punishment for, like, breaking the law. It was just to silence me.
So until today, I understand that Patrick Mahoney is shuttling between London and Geneva, and Tarek Obaid is still in Geneva. Both of them are facing investigations, but they have yet to be charged. Is that right?
That's correct. They have been under... So we filed the criminal complaints in October 2017, last year. More than a year ago. So we filed the complaint the 23rd of October, and they were under investigation since the month of November 2017. A year ago. They are still under investigation. They have not been charged. That's the way the justice system works. That's the speed of the justice. I know they are guilty. Everybody knows the matter that I've seen the evidences. They know they are guilty. But that's the way the system works. That's the way the system has to be working. First you investigate and after you charge. I would love that the charge will be already filed, but that's the way it works. It doesn't depend on me or my wife. It seems very slow. Sometimes it's painfully slow, but that's the way it is.
So the Petro Saudi billions, or the Malaysian taxpayer billions, some of it went, obviously, according to your assertions, to pay off the Thai police. Have they, or the people involved, are they part of any investigations now? Are they the parties involved and complicit in this investigation, in this issue? Are they being investigated?
First, I'm not going, or we are not going to file complaints in Thailand. It's a lost case.
Why is it a lost case? I mean, you are barred from entering that country for 100 years, I understand.
Yes, I still have like 97 to go, so I will go back to Thailand when I will be like either in a coffin under medical assistance. But that's what they wanted, again, not for me to go back there and to make some noise. That's fine with me. I'm not going to file criminal complaints against the Thai police. For the first reason, I will not win the case. I don't think that under a military regime I'll be able to fight fairly in a court. So I'm not going to spend money by hiring lawyers and going there or hiring people to represent me there for a lost case. It's a lost case. Sometimes you have to face reality. We live in a world like this.
So the lawsuit that you filed against The Edge, you did it via a Singaporean lawyer, apparently named Suresh Damodara, yeah? You actually, in that lawsuit, didn't ask for the money, but you actually asked for the return of the two hard drives. As we know by now, obviously that was probably under duress and under Petro Saudi directions. Is that right?
So this is the first time I will explain that on the media, because it's a point that they never asked. So I'm very glad that you asked the questions. So when my first lawyer paid by Petro Saudi, came to visit me in Thailand to defend me, but it was to make the media coverage. He hired a Singaporean lawyer.
Suresh Damodaran.
I don't remember the name. I met the guy one time. Okay. That's it. A few minutes, I had to sign a paper that was filled in advance, and he left. I never saw the guy anymore. So this Maître Ancelin asked me to file a complaint in the Singaporean court against Claire Castle, K-Tat, and Mr. Tong. I don't even remember what was on the complaint. I have learned after that it was for the returning of the file, for nothing else. I don't know. I think Petro Saudi paid this Singaporean lawyer. Do you think that's normal? That it doesn't seem very strange that the guy that sent me to jail are forcing me to file a complaint against people, and they are paying my lawyer. So I was forced to file a complaint in the criminal court of Singapore. That's it. I signed a paper. I met the Singaporean lawyer for probably 5 to 10 minutes. He disappeared. Of course, he never visited me.
Did you sign off on the letter? Did you put your signature to any letter filing this claim?
Of course, yes. I was in a Thai prison. I was sleeping in the ground like a dog.
So it was under duress?
Of course. I would have signed complaints against probably the whole world if I had to. I just wanted to go back home.
How bad was the jail?
As bad as you can imagine. I don't wish to anybody. And to be honest, I don't even wish to Tarek Obaid and Patrick Mahony to finish in a Thai jail. Because this is not only illegal, it's inhuman.
What was the worst thing about it?
There are so many... I can speak for hours of this. It's, you see, old people, they have been in jail for so many years that they don't even know why they are there. I've seen people with mental diseases that they are sick. I've seen old people with one leg. The prison is so overcrowded that you can't find a spot to be seated during the day. The food, my dog will not eat the food. The water is dirty. You have to wash yourself, wash your teeth, take a shower in the same spot where 50 people, and I'm sorry for the word, are shitting all night long. This is not only probably illegal, it's immoral. It's something that in 2015 should not exist. This is something from 200 or 300 years ago. Not even bad criminals should be faced to that.
I'm talking this morning to the 1MDB whistleblower, André Xavier Giusto. After this, we're going to be talking about the last part of this whole episode and what lies for you after that. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill.
Xavier André Giusto, the 1MDB whistleblower, is with me on the Breakfast Grill this morning. Now, Xavier, last 10 minutes. Today, until this second, you have not been paid the 2.5 million Swiss francs that you actually wanted by either Tarek Obaid or Patrick Mahony or Ho Kee Tat or Datuk Tong Kwee Ong for the information that you had on those hard drives. Do you feel aggrieved by that?
You're very oriented with these 2.5 million.
That's the whole basis of your...
I haven't been paid by anybody living or dead in this planet or on any other planet. And I'm good with that. I'm living a very happy life. I'm living with my wife, with my son. I have a lot of friends. I have a job. I'm good health. That's the most important point. Those are one of the lessons that this experience had taught me. And it seems maybe naive or like in a book for kids. That's my reality.
And yet you call them friends. I think you're on record as saying that Ho Kee Tat and Tong Kwee Ong, even Claire Rucastle Brown, they are your very close friends now. You've got a bond with them. What do you mean by that bond?
I did something, meaning that I gave some data to Claire and The Edge. They published those data. The final result is for Malaysia to have a new government, a non-corrupted government, a non-kleptocratic government. To reach that stage, a few people have suffered. I've spent 18 months in jail. Claire has been threatened. DH has been, I think, forbidden for a few months. It's another kind of suffering, but it's suffering. It's a common bond that we have. We have a small share of what happened, but it's something that we did together. So forever we'll remain bonded.
Now, Joe Lau, okay, he remains at large. You've met him twice, actually. Once in Nobu restaurant in London, and then once on a yacht in the south of France named the Princess Mariana, which actually you rented on officially for about $500,000 a week, Malaysian taxpayers' money, of course, as the official renter. Apparently, no business was discussed, and you have described Joe Lau as quite unimpressive. Is that right?
So
how did he describe you?
Let me just reply to the first part of your very interesting question. The Princess Mariana yacht was rented for 500,000 euros a week. I think it was rented for at least a month. It was rented under my name because Mr. Tarek Obaid didn't want to appear. I just want to assure you and everybody that is listening, and maybe my mother, if one day she listens to that, I didn't pay for this renting. Those people, when they steal that amount of money, they have no more limits. They have no more moral limits to spend 2 million of Malaysian people's money to hire a boat that can host probably 10 people and you have like 25 people working on it, it's something that is, again, it's illegal because it's done with stolen money, but it's something that should not happen in our world. But that's what they do. That's what the first part of the question. I just wanted to be sure that nobody could think that I'm the type of guy, even if I had a billion, I would not do that. This is beyond ridiculous. It's pathetic. It's like throwing money just for the... They don't even move the boats. It's just to be seen with the biggest yacht around. It's a kind of competition between those millionaires or billionaires. At school, when we were kids, we were like comparing other things. But when they grow up, they're comparing the size of the yacht. That's the way it is.
And then Joe Lau, he was shy, right? How did he strike you?
So, as I said, I didn't discuss business with him because I was told not to talk business with him. So I didn't. So we spoke about, and I don't honestly remember the topics of our conversation, which were not very intense. Probably it was about the quality of the sushis or the temperature of the water in the south of France. But I don't know. I met only him twice in 2000, I think it was 10, yes. He's very, very discreet, very quiet. He will not like stand up and speak. If you don't speak to him, he will not speak to you. He's my only souvenir of him, like a very shy guy.
Incredible. And yet you were a financial services guy. You've seen all kinds of scams and traders and all kinds of heists, yeah, in your lifetime. But this guy has pulled off the heist of the universe, right? And yet he seems so unassuming. Must have been a bit of a head spin for you.
I do think that this guy suffers from a kind of mental illness because to achieve the level of these scams is something that I've never been seen in history. But for what? For just renting yachts, buying jets, buying paintings, offering thousands of bags and jewelry to models. He hasn't done anything with that money except spending for nothing, just inviting prestigious guests, actors, singers. What did he really get out of this money? Nothing. He's just making other people rich, paying half a million, or I don't know how much he paid for Britney Spears to appear in a birthday cake. I don't get the point. I'm not a criminal, but I do understand criminals that steal money to go to another country, to buy a nice house maybe, and have a living. You know, I understand that. But to steal money from your own people, which is, and not your own people, your own poor people, and just to have Jamie Foxx drinking with you, how pathetic is that? That's why I really think that he's probably mentally sick.
Yeah. So what's going to represent closure for you now, Xavier?
The closure is done. As I said before, I'm living a very happy life. I'm happier now than I was before, prior to my arrest, which you may find funny, but that's the case. The closure is done. Maybe the final closure will be like reading that those people will end up in jail.
You've never met the Malaysian Prime Minister. Well, the Malaysian ex-Prime Minister, have you?
The ex-Prime Minister, Mr. Najib, no, never.
You saw the Al Jazeera interview?
Yes.
What did you think?
Going back to Al Jazeera, so if your auditors want to look at Al Jazeera early December, there will be a nice interview about my case with
my
wife.
You are talking to Marianne Jolly as well,
yes,
aren't you?
Yes, so okay. I met her like 10 days ago. She's a very good journalist. She's very pushy. She's not a soft journalist. So when I saw the interview of your prime minister, I mean...
Ex-prime minister.
Ex-prime minister, I'm sorry. I couldn't believe it. I don't know who told him to go on TV because it was the worst acting performance ever. So I don't know if he has a PR. If he hasn't, he should hire one because you can't go on TV and be that bad. You're already, he had almost no more credibility. But with this acting, you're losing the last piece of your credibility. It was a pathetic moment.
Well, Xavier, it was a real it was a real pleasure and a privilege to have spoken with you. I mean, ignoring the complicated circumstances of the way you procured the hard drives, without your intervention and role in this whole saga, Clara Castle Brown and the Edge would not have had the material with which to cover the scandal, and Malaysia would not have been saved, in a manner of speaking. So thank you, and good luck with the next chapter in your life. We were talking to Xavier Andre Justo, the 1MDB whistleblower and former Petro Saudi director, whose leak of hundreds and thousands of emails in the 1MDB scandal involving Joe Lau helped trigger multi-jurisdictional investigations into this huge financial scandal and saved Malaysia in the process. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.